Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock and heavy metal. Two national radio shows, best-selling books, and host of That Metal Show on VH1 Classic. Now, Eddie's bringing his honest, no-nonsense approach and passion to the world of podcasting. You'll hear commentary, analysis, celebrity guests, and who knows what else. PodcastOne.com presents The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome, everybody. Eddie Trunk, another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. New every Thursday, podcastone.com, and of course, iTunes. Thank you guys for downloading, streaming, listening. Great to be with you for another week. Hope you enjoyed Robin Zander last week. How cool was that? That was a lot of fun and a great conversation. You know, sometimes I don't get a chance to actually listen to my own podcast back. I've mentioned that a number of times. It's, you know, so much going on, so much stuff that I'm dealing with. Sometimes the whole week goes by and I never even get a chance to listen back to the podcast. But I did some traveling over the week and I did listen to that podcast back and got to tell you, I enjoyed it. Sometimes when I'm in the middle of doing an interview, I'm so kind of wrapped up on the moment and where it's going to go that there's things that the artists say that I kind of miss. And it's fun to listen to them back just without having to worry about being in the moment, so to speak, and conducting the interview. And hearing Robin Zander talk about the history of Cheap Trick and all those great stories and had his son with him, which is really cool. I'll tell you what, man, his son could very well be a star. He's a great-looking kid. He can play any instrument, a real nice kid. And I saw him play with Robin, and he's... Now, he could be a chip off the old block for Robin Zander and very much following his dad's footsteps. I think he said he was 21 now, and his name is also Robin, so you could have a Robin Zander Jr. out there make you feel really old doing some great music as well. But it was fun to spend that time with Robin Zander, and again, as I say so many times, the best interviews, the best people are the guys that are just so chill, and they just hang, and you know they're not uptight, and you can tell stories, and you don't have to worry about tiptoeing around certain aspects of their career. Same thing with the guys in Cheap Trick. Just great guys. And Cheap Trick, one of those bands that transcends all genres of rock music. Metal guys love Cheap Trick, rock guys, hard rock guys, and another band that beyond comprehension is not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Just absolutely absurd. I think they'll get there one day, though, because they have enough people who have like an influential voice on those things, guys like Dave Grohl and stuff like that, that could very possibly push those buttons and help get a band like that in the hall. Let's hope that that indeed does happen. So my thanks to Robin Zander with that podcast exclusive interview last week for the Eddie Trunk Podcast. I did some traveling, like I said, since I saw you guys last. I was in Florida with Alice Cooper. A week ago from yesterday, I hosted a show with Alice at the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Alice Cooper, a prime example of an artist that age has had literally no bearing on in terms of his performance, his voice, his ability to perform, even what he looks like. Now, clearly he's older, but think about this. When Alice was a kid, And in the earliest parts of his career, he still made himself up to look kind of old and decrepit and scary, right? So now he just has to use less makeup. He still pretty much looks the same. Alice Cooper is a guy that never was vocally some virtuoso singer, but his voice suited the music, and he still sings exactly the same, which a lot of guys at his age can't say they can do anymore. He's always very smartly surrounded himself with a very good younger band. He has three guitar players now, including a young female guitarist by the name of Nita Strauss, who used to play in an Iron Maiden tribute. Saw her play with Femme Fatale a couple times. And just a killer band. Killer set of music, great show. Think about this. Alice Cooper is opening for Motley Crue on Motley Crue's farewell tour because they're going away because they had enough. And Alice Cooper's like 15 years younger than those guys. And he's still going strong. Now, I've said many times, I think it's great that Motley Crue is ending because they're doing it for the right reason. They're doing it before that band falls apart again, and they want to end with the original four guys. And that is a very noble and a good reason, I think, to end, because it's a different situation. Alice is a solo act, more or less. And he can call his shots. But Alice Cooper still brings it and is as good as he's ever been at this point, 45 years into his career. And if you get a chance, check out the documentary Super Duper Alice Cooper or Super Mensch. There's two different documentaries. Super Mensch is about his manager, Shep Gordon, and a lot of Alice is in that as well. But great stuff. And I'm going to have a podcast interview with Alice Cooper in the next week or two right here. So be on the lookout for that to post. As always, to find out what's going on in my world and what's coming up to the podcast, go to the Trunk Report. That's my blog on my website, eddietrunk.com. While you're there, have a look at the homepage, all of my appearances. There are a ton of them. I'm coming to Michigan, Virginia, Delaware, New Jersey, Portland, Seattle, San Jose, California, M3 Festival, Rocklahoma, Monsters of Rock Cruise, tons of stuff. Please check my homepage for all my appearances. Email me through the site. I've got merch available, Eddie Trunk t-shirts, hats, brand new designs. Hit the merch store on eddietrunk.com. Sign personalized copies of either of my books directly from me. When you guys order those books signed through my website, it comes directly to me. I sign them, personalize them however you want, send them back to you. I can only do U.S. orders for that. The details just hit books on my site. Music news posted daily by Dana. So much to do. The one and only official online home is eddietrunk.com. And on social media, I'm on Twitter at eddietrunk, Facebook /eddietrunk, Instagram eddietrunkofficial. Visited Pittsburgh for the first time. Had a gig there on Saturday with Don and Jim. That was a blast at the Rex Theater. We did two shows. The weather was awful, but we had a packed house in our first show and about a half a house in our second. Way more people than we ever thought, especially with the awful weather that we had over last weekend. Also did the live show with Don and Jim at the Starland Ballroom in Sayreville, New Jersey this past Friday. Thank you to all who came out to that as well. A lot of people ask me what goes on at these live shows, and if it's a solo show where it's just me, it's a storytelling show. I'm up on stage for an hour and a half, telling some stories, having some fun with the audience, taking questions, and then wrapping it up with a little live Stump the Trunk. And sometimes the promoters have bands play after me. And when I do the show with Don and Jim, it's similar, although Don and Jim are both stand-up comics, so they do more of a stand-up comedy set, and I do much more of an abbreviated version of what I do on my own. Fun both ways. Hopefully you guys come out and see us again. Please look at the appearances on the homepage of my site. And of course, the biggest thing that happened since I spoke to you guys last week was the season premiere of the 14th season of my TV show, That Metal Show, on VH1 Classic with Don and Jim. Had an absolute blast. Geddy Lee. I mean, just what else can you say about Geddy? The guy was just awesome. And again, that get back to that same old thing. Nothing better than guys that don't take it all too seriously. You can have fun with. You don't have to be afraid to speak and say what you think. For years, I always hated the way Exit Stage Left sounded and thought it was a dead-sounding live album. To find out that Geddy Lee feels the same way. Well, if you saw my reaction during the throwdown at the end of last week's episode of That Metal Show, you know why. I was just floored. I thought for sure I was going to be on an island fighting everybody, trying to convince them that All the World's a Stage is the better live album from Rush. To find Geddy Lee feels the same way I do about Exit Stage Left was amazing to me. Oh, man, it was so cool. Joe Elliott coming out, doing that top five with us. John Petrucci ripping it up on guitar. What a way to kick off the new season of That Metal Show. Thank you guys for watching. Great response, great reviews across the board, and great to be doing TMS once again. New episodes every Saturday night, 9 p.m. Eastern on VH1 Classic for the next 11 weeks more. The new show this weekend will feature all five members of Anthrax and Alex Skolnick on guitar. I was able to bring my recorder and grab a few minutes with Joe Elliott and Geddy Lee, audio exclusive. I'll try to post that here in the podcast in the next few weeks. It's not that long. Usually the interviews I do here on the podcast are half an hour or more long, or sometimes an hour long. I didn't have that sort of time because I was multitasking and doing TV as well. But I'll try to put some of that stuff on for you here in the podcast if I can in a few weeks from now. Next week, I think we're going to have Alice Cooper as the podcast. But Rush were phenomenal. I do think this is the last Rush tour. Rush is not the kind of band that's going to play the farewell tour card. Neil Peart has a young baby. Neil suffered an unspeakable tragedy a number of years ago when he lost his daughter in a car accident, his wife to illness a week apart. It almost ended Rush at the time. Neil has a whole new life now, remarried with a new baby. He knows how fleeting time is. He knows how precious it is to see your kids and spend time, especially at this point in his life. So the sense that I get is that Neil is the one that really wants to wind it down. As you've heard Geddy say during that metal show, there's conflicting reports within the band as far as how much more any of them want to do. So you're not going to get Rush like Motley Crue playing a farewell tour card. This will be pretty much the end of them touring, though. So I've heard a lot of people say, well, we're going to wait for a show closer to us. There may not be any. These 30 dates they've announced very well could be it. Trust me, Rush doesn't do things like most other bands. So don't expect them to milk this. They may do a show from time to time going forward. Geddy Lee definitely told me they are definitely open to making records. But listen, when you're in your mid-60s, and in the case of Neil and what he went through and having a young baby at home that he wants to see grow up with the time he's still around, that's a powerful thing, man. And 40-plus years putting in, Geddy also mentioned how physically difficult it is for Neil at this point in his life. So as fans, we just, you know, we don't think about all the personal stuff, all the family stuff, all the behind-the-scenes stuff. We just want to see our favorite bands play. So much more that goes into this just in life for these guys. It's just not that simple anymore. So point being, if you want to see Rush, I'd say get out there and make a road trip to one of these dates that's been announced, because that may be it, barring scattered appearances going forward and maybe even some more records. But as far as touring, this is kind of it. And it remains to be seen exactly what songs they're going to do and how they're going to address this. They're working on it, but Geddy wasn't willing to talk about that when we shot the episode of That Metal Show. Great to have Joe Elliott on, although that top five bit went off the rails a little bit. It was really a mess. Joe will be back with us in a recorded interview that we did in a future episode of TMS. I'll let you know when that's going to air. A couple quick things on That Metal Show that amazed me. I didn't see it when it aired for the first time because I was on stage in Pittsburgh doing our live show. But I did scroll through social media, and 99% of the response was amazingly positive. So thank you all for that. Couple things pretty funny, though. A lot of people made a big deal out of the fact that we were all wearing long-sleeve, button-down, collared shirts. People thought that VH1 instituted some sort of dress code. The reason why Jim and I were wearing flannels is because it's cold. Everyone was like, where's the concert shirts? Where's the band concert shirts? Guys, it's been zero in New York City for like 3 weeks now. And yes, we're inside, but it's still cold in that studio. Trust me, the band shirts will be back. As a matter of fact, technically, my shirt was a band shirt, because if you look closely, there was a Marilyn Manson flannel. It had the Marilyn Manson logo was above the pocket. But we've got plenty of T-shirts to wear. There's no dress code. It's just cold. It's February in New York in a cold studio. So that's why we wore long sleeves. It's funny that people come up with these conclusions and what they think. And going through social media, I saw a lot of that. The other thing I hear about constantly is the fact that VH1 Classic is not an HD channel. Guys, that is as frustrating for me as it is for you. It is incomprehensible to me that in the year 2015, we're still talking about a TV channel that does not broadcast in high definition. But it has nothing to do with me. I have zero control over it. I do not own VH1 Classic. So when the people that do decide to upgrade the channel and bring it into the modern age, great. But I have zero control over that, and it is beyond frustrating and beyond any words that they have not done that yet. Just so you understand, though, That Metal Show is shot in HD. Up until, like, starting with season four, I think, we've been shot in HD. But the channel doesn't broadcast that way. Every once in a while, they'll run one of our older episodes in HD on the sister channel, Palladia. And that's why you can see it that way in HD, because that channel broadcasts in HD. VH1 Classic is not available anywhere yet in HD. Again, ridiculous, but it's true, and that is a corporate thing that has nothing to do with me. But you can see it close to HD, probably online. If you go to thatmetalshow.vh1.com, you can watch it online. It probably looks better than it does on your big widescreen TV. But I have nothing to do with that, and it makes me nuts as well. So that's the deal on that front. One of these days, I mean, who knows if I'll still be doing the show when they decide to make it an HD channel. And I also have no control, and I realize that people listening to this podcast listen to it all over the world. In some countries, That Metal Show is seen, in others, it's not. I have no control over that at all, folks. I wish I did. If it was up to me, it would be everywhere. I understand in some countries it was on, it's not anymore. I understand that the website, the official website to see the shows, it's often blocked with from IP addresses outside of the U.S. Zero to do with me. No control of that whatsoever. I do hear from people in countries that the show is not on that have very creative ways to work around that stuff and still get to see it, and I applaud you and thank you. And I'm fine with it. I want everybody to see it. All this sort of stuff is not my doing. But there are very resourceful fans that are going to make sure they see the show one way or the other in all these countries. And keep it up. Keep spreading the word. Find a way to see it. I appreciate you doing so. I wish it didn't have to be that way. And I wish it was just on as a regular broadcast. But in some places, it's just not. And again, it's all stuff that's out of my hands. All right, on to this week's interview. And by the way, the new That Metal Show this weekend, I think I said it, maybe not, all the members of Anthrax. We got a very diverse artist roster. We're still not fully booked. We still have some more slots to fill. So we'll be letting you know each week as we go who the guests are going to be. We tape those shows Tuesday in New York City. And again, they premiere on VH1 Classic on Saturday nights at 9 Eastern. Please follow on Twitter at Eddie Trunk. And please keep an eye on The Trunk Report, my blog on eddietrunk.com for more details on the TV side with my radio shows, the podcast, and everything else. The interview today is with Joe Holmes. You know, one of the things I love to do is balance. I love to have the big name guests, but I also love to have people that were maybe a little under the radar. And people discover through this podcast or through interviews that I do. Joe Holmes is a guy that I felt was very tragically overlooked in the history of Aussie guitar players. He never made a studio record with Aussie, but he did play live with Aussie for about 5 years. And I saw him live with Aussie, and I thought he was amazing. But he's a guy that's never talked about in the Aussie guitar history, mostly because he didn't do a record with Aussie. Joe Holmes also played with David Lee Roth, again, a forgotten guy in that band. Everybody talks about Vi, and rightfully so, but Joe Holmes came in, didn't make a studio record with Roth, but came in and replaced Jason Becker on the Little Ain't Enough tour. He's a phenomenal guitar player, and I was always a fan, and I don't know him that well, And he dropped out of music for a while to raise a family. Then about a year ago, I ran into Joe Holmes and met him face-to-face for the first time in L.A. at a Jakey Lee Red Dragon Cartel show. And he had heard that for years I kind of said that I was a fan and enjoyed his work and thought he was somewhat overlooked. And he told me about this new band he was doing called Pharmacos. And he started sending me music as he made it through the studio and made it from the studio to me. And I've been playing it. If you listen to either of my radio shows, my FM show or my satellite show, I've been playing this music for months now, and I love it. It is slamming. It's like Alice in Chains meets Soundgarden with way more guitar and killer vocals from a guy named Robbie Locke. And the bass player that helped out is Rob Trujillo from Metallica. And you wonder where that connection is. Well, when Joe Holmes was in Ozzy, Rob was Ozzy's bass player. So Robert helped out Joe make the record. The record's available now through Amazon. Pharmacos is the name, Pharmicos. It's one of my favorite records to come out in the early part of 2015. So I spent some time talking with Joe about his history, about Ozzy, about Roth, and about this new band and much more. So I think you'll find it an interesting conversation as a rock fan. And I hope you like Pharmacos and go check out the music. If you've been listening to my radio show, you know what it sounds like. But I think it's slamming. So coming up in just a couple minutes, Joe Holmes, former Ozzy guitarist, former David Lee Roth guitarist, and now with a new band called Pharmacos as this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. Well, I just mentioned to you guys the Pharmacos album on CD is available at Amazon.com. So what a segue that is. Anything you buy at Amazon, you know what you got to do, right? As a matter of fact, tax season is here. I know that's the case because my accountant just called me. And that means we'll hopefully be receiving some extra cash. I hope I will because I get taxed out the yin-yang, but I'm not banking on it. But hopefully you get some extra cash, and if you do, treat yourself to something at Amazon. Maybe it's the Pharmacos record I just told you about. Maybe it's Eddie Trunk's Essential Hard Rock and Heavy Metal Volume 1 or 2, either of my books that Amazon sells. Maybe it's CDs. Maybe it's DVDs. Maybe it's stuff for your house, stuff for your kids, stuff for your car. Hopefully the weather's going to get nicer soon. Stuff to fix up outside. Whatever it is, you know the deal. Amazon helps support this podcast and keeps it free by offering the show, this podcast, I should say, a small commission on the products you purchase. So next time you purchase anything from Amazon, click on the Support the Sponsors banner on my PodcastOne.com show page. There you'll see the Amazon banner, all the other great sponsors I have. Click through those banners before you buy. It will not cost you a penny more. It gives us a little bit of money that keeps this podcast free for you guys each and every week. Be sure to use my Amazon banner if you're located in Canada or the UK. Also, to make it easier for all future purchases, feel free to bookmark my Amazon URL. Thanks for buying through Amazon and the links on my page on podcastone.com. Thank you for listening to the Eddie Trunk podcast. And I'll be right back with a great conversation with Joe Holmes this week.
From the Oscar-winning screenwriter of 12 Years a Slave comes television's most extraordinary new dramatic series. Starting Thursday, March 5th, watch American Crime live at 10, 9 Central on ABC. Then tune into the American Crime podcast hosted by me, Elvis Mitchell. Each week we'll have a candid conversation with show creator John Ridley, plus show talent, character storylines, and more. Go to podcastone.com/American Crime to subscribe now.
I'm so excited this record's finally coming out. You know, I did a podcast where I mentioned my favorite records like at the halfway point of 2014, and I had Pharmacos as number one. And then when I did my year-end list, I didn't put it on the list because I realized the record's not out yet. So you can't have a best, even though I had it, you can't have a best of 2014 with a record that wasn't released yet. So I got a good feeling for 2015 now with that record finally coming out. It'll still hang around long enough to make my final top 10 for this new year. It is just mind-blowingly great stuff. Again, the band is called Pharmacos. And now, as I said, the record is finally coming out. And with that in mind, we welcome in the band's leader and guitarist, Joe Holmes. How are you, Joe?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Eddie.
Thank you so much for the time, man, and I'm so excited for this new band. I'm so glad you're finally ready to unveil it for the masses.
Yeah. I appreciate everything you do for us, too. It cracks me up because I don't know if you remember back out here in L.A. when I was growing up, in high school, I used to listen to the Mighty Metal Hour, KMET.
Well, I'm an East Coast guy, so I don't know that.
Did you ever hear about it? Yeah, but they used to, on Friday nights, they would play like an hour of the music. And so now, on Friday nights, I go and I listen to your Q104.3. I'll even be at dinner with like my wife and my daughter, and I'll be like, man, I got to get home by 8. And then by the end of the show, I've got like 3 guitars out. I've been listening to 3 hours of your stuff, but it just really brings back so many great memories, and man, it's great that you're doing all this.
Well, that's cool. That's a funny parallel too, because that show that you're talking about, which is my terrestrial show, which is syndicated, unfortunately I can't get a station in LA to run it.
Yeah.
But it's cool that you're able to go to the app and listen to it, and starts early there. It starts 8 o'clock out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I got to get the Sirius too, and because through the years, like when I met you over at Jake's show. I always heard that you would mention me or say something nice to me about me on the radio, and where I get my guitars worked on, it's Eric's Guitar Shop. They always listen to you. They're faithful listeners, so these guys would always keep me in the loop and stuff, but I should probably get the Sirius radio too.
Well, shout out to Eric's Guitar Shop. That's very cool. Listen, man, it's funny though, you talk about that old metal show that you listened to in LA.
Yeah.
And I was doing my show, started in 83, on Friday nights, the same thing. So there was a few of us out there doing it for a really long time, and I'm still happy to do that one, and I'm happy to do this one. But I'll tell you, nothing gets me – the whole reason I started all of this stuff when I was a kid right out of high school was to be able to take music that I loved, that I was really amped up about, and have a way to share it with other people.
Yeah.
So getting into radio is the really reason I did that, and then I found out the dirty little secret a few years later that most radio DJs don't control what they play. And I was like, well, then radio's not for me. So I kind of was able to successfully carve that out. So when I get something like your band and it just knocks me out, I can say, you guys got to hear this. And then the coolest thing that happens, Joe, is when you share it with your audience and they say, hell yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Tell me about it. So our story is interesting because unlike 99% of the people I talk to all the time, I don't know you that well.
Yeah.
I saw you play with Ozzy a bunch of times, and I always said positive things because I was blown away by your playing with Ozzy live. And I've always looked at you as kind of like the forgotten guy because you didn't do a studio record with him. And then you kind of went off the radar a little bit. So I guess, starting back in those days, talk about your earliest history for people that don't know your work, being on the LA scene.
Well, yeah, I had a band called Tariff in the early days, getting out of high school. That it was a great band. There was a couple versions of it, but the first one was really good. And then from playing around LA, and also in that time, I got to play with Lizzie Borden. I did a record, Visualize, with Lizzie Borden. And from playing around L.A., Greg Bissonette from Dave Lee Ross Band heard about me, and I got to go audition for Dave. The scene back then was really good. A lot of great players, and like Warren, from Rat, when I saw him at the show, at Jake's show, there's a lot of great bands playing out back then, and I ended up getting to do the David Lee Roth tour, and then I went back to my Tariff band, and then Mike Inez and Dean Castronova, they called me and asked me about the Ozzy gig, and I got to go down, and I auditioned. I played like 3 songs, and Ozzy said, shook my hand and said, welcome aboard. And next thing you know, I was learning a whole bunch of songs and shooting out to South America.
Well, let's backpedal a second. Is it true, someone had told me this, that you actually took lessons from Randy Rhoads? Is that true?
Yeah. Yeah. When I was 16, it's weird. This guy popped into my life for a couple weeks, and just long enough to take me to a Quiet Riot show. He was taking lessons from Randy, and then I never heard from him again after that. And I got to go to down to Musonia, and I remember even the first time I was at Musonia, Randy was teaching someone else in there, and man, it was so intimidating. I wanted to leave. I mean, it that huge sound coming out of this from a little practice amp out of his room, and I was sitting in there in the waiting room with my sister, and that man, this just it blew me away. So I was so fortunate and lucky to have got to, you know, meet and take from Randy, and he was a perfect guy for me growing up. You know, people idolize people. He's a perfect guy to look up to. That just was. Just an amazing person and just such a great player and really, you know, put it in ways that made it really easy for me to understand. So, you know, when you left that lesson, you knew what you had to be working on. And I didn't get to take him that long because he got the Aussie gig. And I remember even the last lesson I had with him, he was leaving the next day, and I was helping him carry out, like, his pedal board, the big, long pedal board and some of the anvils that he was going, you know, back to England or whatever. So... So it was just a really great time in my life.
So how many lessons, Joe, would you say you had with him?
You know, I probably took him for like 3 months worth of lessons, and then
he
went and did the Aussie records, and then he came back, and I got to take for like 2 more weeks worth of lessons from him. So
how accomplished of a player were you before you even took lessons from Randy Rhodes?
Well, I'd been playing for a while, and you know, it's great because your Michael Schenker also was a really huge influence on me. Back in high school, that Strangers in the Night record.
The best.
I mean, it was that. And, I mean, I locked myself in the room for like 2 days learning Rock Bottom Live. You know, that solo, it was incredible. So he really put me on the right track, though, like my alternate picking and my vibrato. Like when I auditioned for Ozzy, I didn't tell him that I took lessons from Randy, but he said that he could, you know, see that influence in my technique and stuff. So,
and did the band that you had, Terrapin, did you ever put out records with them?
No, we never did, and we should have, but it just, you know, couldn't keep that band the first lineup, the really good lineup of it, couldn't keep it together. He had just different guys in there with different personalities, but it was really. It was a really great band.
Did you have success locally in the LA circuit? Yeah, were you doing good with shows?
Yeah, we were playing. We would play like the Country Club and the Roxy. We used to play the Roxy a lot, and we'd have big crowds. Really, we were doing pretty good.
Now, let me ask you about going and playing with David Lee Roth, because obviously you came into that under tough circumstances with Jason Becker.
Yeah.
Did you know Jason?
No, but when I did audition for him, he was in there playing.
Oh, really?
And what a great player. Yeah, he was playing, he was like sitting up against the drum riser.
So it had gotten to the point where he did the record and that he was at least kind of noodling around, doing like a rehearsal?
Yeah, because I didn't even know, you know, I didn't know. No, another funny thing is that, you know, I was standing out. There was a long line of guitar players at Dave's house, and he did the auditions in the basement where, you know, Van Halen, all them back in Pasadena.
So it was like a cattle call audition. Literally, people lined up.
Well, I mean, it was a lot of. There was a few guys out there. It was cattle call, but yeah, they had a bunch of guys. And
do you remember who else? Anybody of note?
No, but maybe 10 guys in line out there. And I had my Marshall heads that I had worked on were done by Jose, and that used to work on like Eddie's stuff. And Dave came walking out, and in the crowd, he came walking up to me and he goes, "Hey, what's your name?" And I said, "I'm Joe." And he goes, and I said, "Yeah, man, I got that Van Halen sound through these, you know, those heads. I still use them. I've been using the same equipment since like 19 years old, yeah, around then." But and then he goes, "Okay, I'll see you in there." And I got in there and did a few songs, and I did Panama, And then I think I did Yankee Rose, and then he said, can you play Gigolo? So I played like half a Gigolo, and then he stopped it and said, yep, I heard enough. And then later on I heard that they cut the line off after me and, you know, went and had like Mexican food or something. And so, but then that was a great experience because, man, I had to learn so many songs with, and I was brought up on the, I loved, you know, Eddie and Van Halen, but I was really brought up on the Michael Schenker and the Randy stuff. And so it was such a great experience getting to go in there and play all that stuff. Like Gigolo, I almost wanted to throw the guitar out the window just trying to learn all the jazz chords and stuff. I had to learn that song. It was like, but it was so worth it after you learned it. And
sure, and you're coming into that band after the success with Steve Vai, so you got to do all his stuff too.
Yeah, you had to learn so much. So it was a great experience.
I mean, you got to be some sort of player to walk into that situation and okay, you got to play Steve Vai, you got to play Eddie Van Halen. I mean,
yeah.
And then you got to play stuff that Jason Becker just did on this new record.
Yeah.
That's heavy duty. And that's interesting though that Jason was there. You know, I just recently read an interview, and for people that don't know, Jason Becker's story is unbelievable and very tragic in a lot of ways, but also I find very inspiring because there's a documentary everybody should check out called Not Dead Yet. I don't know if you've seen it, Joe.
No, I haven't seen it.
It's remarkable, and it tells his story, and Jason battles ALS, and he, you know, by all accounts, I mean, he was given a year to live 20 years ago, and the people around him that take care of him and care for him,
yeah.
And the fact that he's still able to make music through a computer with his eyes, it's really remarkable, and it's very, very inspiring, not only to see how he's persevered, but the people around him and how supportive they've been of him. But that's interesting, because I read an interview recently where he said he knew he was sick and he knew he had something wrong with him, and he was just kind of, he knew he wasn't going to get to go out live. So I guess he was kind of just waiting in the wings and seeing the parade of people coming in and who was going to get the gig.
Yeah. And I mean, really great player. I remember going in there and, you know, just, he was really a great player.
So he was actually playing before you would take the guitar and play?
We're both together.
Oh, he played in the auditions.
Yeah, he was playing, because when I first got in there too, Dave wanted to try two guitars at first, probably because of the record, because I think Steve Hunter too, I don't know if he played on it, but he wrote some of the songs on that record. But so anyways, they had this guy Desi playing guitar too, and he actually did, I think, like a handful of shows in Europe with us, and then I think Dave just decided he wanted the one guitar in there. So
how long were you and David Lee Roth's band?
I toured Europe with them, and then we toured, God, man, maybe 3 months in the States with Extreme and Cinderella. Did you go to any of those?
I probably did. I'm pretty sure I did. I mean, it's all a blur, man.
Yeah, I'm surprised you and me never met at even the Ozzy shows. I can't believe that.
I know, it is strange. I don't know how that happened either. But we just met recently at Jake's show at the Whiskey. But
and you've almost been like another member of the band, because, you know, I've been like, I'll get done in the studio and I'll run off a CD and I'll be like, bam, next morning I'm at the you know, post office mailing it out to you.
I know, because I'm so old school, I still love my CDs. But
yeah, and even the mastering, you know, we were trying to go for really non-compressed masters, which we still did, but when you were telling me bump it a little bit, and you know, so then I'd go back to the drawing board with the studio guy, and we were just, man, we'd do it for like 2 days, we'd be mastering this stuff, and then
I didn't make you crazy, Joe.
No, you know what? It's been such a great learning experience, and it's great because we recorded all this on 2-inch. We use the Pro Tools to edit it, but it's all been recorded on the 2-inch, and so it's really been, it's you know, like even this next, I'm ready to start recording more stuff. Like I really, because we're, you know, we're checking out players right now, and which I would love to put them be on the next recordings. But I don't want to. You know, have too much time in between. So I want to, because we've really got it down right now. Like, and Robbie, the singer, is amazing.
Well, I want to talk about Pharmacos in detail, and we're going to get there, but I'm going chronologically.
Okay.
I'm
going
chronologically here. So just to finish up on Roth, you hear so many amazing stories about Roth. What was your experience working with him? Did you have a lot of interaction with him off stage?
Yeah, you know, and look, man, so smart. Like, he really introduced me to a lot of blues stuff. Like, sometimes he'd tell me, like, by ZZ Top, learn Blue Jean Blues, and I would go, and we'd do it at, like, at a sound check. Even a Clint Black song one time I had to learn. So it's just, like, it just really opened my eyes to a lot of different music. He's a really smart guy. Really was a great experience.
So who else was in that band with you on live? I don't remember. Was it Greg Bissonette?
Yeah, Greg Bissonette, Brett Tuggle, Todd Jensen. Yeah.
Todd Jensen played bass?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I'm sure I was probably at one of those shows, but I don't recall. So, okay, so that ends.
Yeah.
And then is there talk of you doing a record with Roth?
Well, okay, yeah, we got. Hey, this is funny, too, because we got to the end of the tour, and I'd been working on riffs. And you know the song Fragile, that that song?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was one of the riffs I wanted to show them. But I got to the end, and then they handed me a cassette of, like, some blues songs, five blues songs or something that they were going to go in the studio with, and by that, you know, and I had like a bunch of heavier riffs that I wanted to at least, you know, introduce to them, but they never heard them. So anyway, so that it kind of fell apart after that, you know.
So you guys go your own ways, and
yeah,
it was what it was. But it was a good experience overall?
Yeah, it was a great experience. And I've been lucky, man. Those two gigs, that and the Ozzy ones for me, were just really, you know, for a guitar player, just so much fun.
So tell me about Ozzy, because I did see you, and that's kind of where you first really came on my radar. I'm sure I saw you with Roth, but the time I recall specifically seeing you, and I don't know what year it was, but you played in New Jersey at what's now called the PNC Bank Arts Center. It used to be the Garden State Arts Center.
Yeah.
And I remember going there, and I know that Zach had left or whatever, and then it was kind of like, who is this guy playing guitar? And I remember I was sitting on your side of the stage. I think you're just wearing jeans with no shirt. And you were just ripping. And I'm like, who is this guy? And then finally, of course, I found out and everything. Tell me about getting the Ozzy gig and how that all came down for you.
Well, yeah, like I said, Mike Inez and Dean Castronova.
Dean was in the band then?
Yeah, he was in the band. And he actually... He came down. He called me and came down to a rehearsal. I was rehearsing with a band called Dogma in North Hollywood, and he came down which was a completely different style of music. He came down and saw that, and then a couple nights later, he came down with Sharon, and then maybe like a couple nights after that, Ozzy came down and. That was it, and then I think like a week later I went and down to, I think it was Audible. There was a rehearsal studio, and I got to, you know, I think I did I Don't Know, Bark at the Moon, and Crowley, and maybe Crazy Train, like those, and Ozzy was like singing 5 feet from me, and I do a solo, and he was standing right there, and I finished it, and a lot of the people from the office were there, and he came over after a little bit and shook my hand, said, "Welcome aboard." Next thing you know, I was at a gun range shooting guns with him.
Wow. What year What year was that, 95?
Yeah, that was 95.
Now, did you know Zach, and did you know this was coming down?
You know, let's even go back before that. I auditioned, I think, when Zach auditioned a couple of years before that. Then, you know, Zach got the gig.
Right. So did you know, I mean, because you said they were just kind of showing up. Did you know they were actively kind of scouting you at that point?
Yeah. Yeah.
You did.
Yeah. And cause I knew they were looking, they were, you know, I think looking for a little bit at that point.
And you came in for the first thing you did was the Osmosis tour, right?
Yep.
Okay, so now you're coming into another situation. You have to play Randy, Tony Iommi, Jakey Lee, and Zach Wilde.
Yeah, I think I had 3 weeks to learn the songs, and then we went in and we rehearsed for a couple weeks, and bam, we were off. We did one show, a production show, like in like Texas, and then we were off to South America. So, I mean, those first South American shows, I was even still, you know, working the songs out, learning them.
And Dean Castronova, who's now in Journey, he was the drummer?
Yeah, he was the drummer, him and Geezer, and then, I don't know, like maybe a handful of shows, and then Ozzy got Randy in there.
Randy Castillo?
Yep, Randy Castillo.
Okay, and then didn't Robert Trujillo come in?
Jeez, man, there's so many.
Did you play with Robert in Ozzy's band?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Robert, after Geezer left, Mike Inez came in and played for a couple. He was doing Alice in Chains, but he came in and did a couple tours with us, maybe 6 months worth of shows. And then we auditioned, I think in 96 or 7, we auditioned a bunch of bass players, and Robert came in and got the gig.
So how many years, Joe, total, were you and Ozzy's band?
From 95 to like 2000, 2001.
Wow, it was that long, huh?
Yeah.
That's amazing, man. Yeah. I didn't really realize that it was that long. So you played with so many different
people.
Yeah,
and I love that lineup. That lineup with Robert and Mike Borden, it was a really... Did you see that lineup?
Yeah, I know I did. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I remember when Mike Borden came in there, and that was killer as well.
Yeah, so it was a really great band.
So is there, I know you didn't make a studio record with Ozzy, but you have a few co-writes, right?
So there's, as people say about that, there's a song out on the Beavis and Butthead, but I mean, I don't even know how much of it is of me on there. It was another song, I didn't write it or anything, but I did some bending of some chords, but that's about it with that. But then at the end of, 2000, the record before me, too, I think they had a lot of... My experience with Ozzy was mostly touring, because the writing thing for that record, there was a bunch of people writing, putting their bids in for that. I mean, me and Robert got to get 3 songs on that record, so, which was really cool. And Zach did it, and Zach, I mean, I love what he did on it, the way he played it, so...
Right.
Songs, but so that was basically my experience with the whole writing thing, but...
Are there any even live albums, official live records or anything with you on them?
No, there's that Perry Mason, there's a Perry Mason live song that I think it was shot at San Bernardino. That one is, and there's no, that's no overdubs or nothing. It's just, a live recording from the show, so.
But there's no official live album or no EP. That's amazing that you could have been in Ozzy's band for 5-6 years, and there's really no documentation of it, which is why I think you're so criminally overlooked in the role of Ozzy players.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time to be in a band and not have a studio record, even a live record from.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was? Was it just the timing?
Yeah, just at that point, that's just what happened, the way it went down. I mean, I feel, we had a bunch of good riffs, good licks and stuff, but, there was a lot of different people writing for those records, the one before me and the one that I was, when I was trying to, put my bid in for that. There was a whole bunch of different writers on that.
Well,
it all works out, it's all good. And Ozzy had a great relationship with Zach, so I had no problem with that. Even when we played San Bernardino, I'd be playing, and which Zach was just really great with. I'd met him before that, but he was a really great guy, and made me feel real welcome, because here I'm up there playing some of, I'm up there playing Mama, I'm Coming Home or No More Tears, and he's on the side of the stage,
That had to be a little weird.
I would look over, and I saw him, and like Dime would be over there, Dimebag, and but Zach was, so I had no problem with it, with him going and, coming back and doing finishing, doing that record and playing with Ozzy, so.
Which record was that? That was Down to Earth?
Oh, gosh.
The timeline screws me up sometimes.
Yeah, I don't even know what the name of the record was.
Well, regardless, maybe Osmosis.
No, because I came in on the Osmosis record.
Okay, so it's probably Down to Earth then.
Yeah, it was the one after that.
So your experience with Ozzy, I've had... Jake is a friend, and yep. I had Jake in here just recently, as a matter of fact. Being very honest about being kind of rooked out of money and songwriting credit, I had the same experience having Bob Daisley in here, who was a huge part of Ozzy's career as a writer and player. You know, very, very upset and negative about his experience, business dealings, working with Sharon, bad deals, signing bad deals, not getting paid, things like that. Your experience being in that camp sounds like it was fairly positive. Do you have any issues?
Yeah, it was very positive. I mean, see, I wasn't in the whole. My experience was more of the touring and stuff, and I mean, they always treated me really great.
So you were a guy to come play live, and you got a salary and were taken care of, and you did your thing. You never crossed into that threshold where it came down to publishing, which I guess is really where it got dicey.
Yeah, mine was basically the touring, and then just, you know, I got three co-writes on one of the records, and that was basically it.
And you get your money for those songs? You got your publishing?
Yeah.
Well, good for you, man. You came out the other side, all right.
Oh, gosh. Yeah.
So, okay.
No, I had a blast, man. My time in there was great, and, you know, everything happens for a reason. It's like, you know, the song Am I One, the mm-hmm. beginning, that reminds me of something that the direction that I would have wanted to go with the Ozzy type of trip,
the way
I write, you know, that's because it sort of has that Believer Randy-ish type of feel to it.
Oh yeah.
And, you know, but it, you know, it, everything works out. And after all that, you know, I ended up wanting to have, cause everyone, you know, there was rumors that I was dead, that I was a born again, which I'm not dead. I'm talking to you. And I was baptized Catholic. I'm still the same, you know?
So let me continue the lineage here, and then we're going to get to what you're doing now. So Ozzy, Zach comes back, Ozzy's over. They just break the news to you that Zach's coming back. Is that pretty much what happens?
Yeah. You know, I just, at that point, after that, it just, you know, it just, same sort of thing. Yeah, he was, because one day he was in there rehearsing with them. And he was back in there. There was different people writing at that point, so it just kind of, you know, you didn't know who was gonna what was gonna be happening, you know. And he came back, and that was it.
Okay, so that's about 2001.
Yep.
Then what happens, because that's where I and a lot of people lost track of you before we get to this band that you're doing now.
Yeah, so then I ended up, I've always been on my guitar. I mean, Eddie, I'm always playing. Like today, I played, you know, all day up until probably about 4 o'clock today. But so after that, I ended up, you know, because I ended up wanting to have a kid. I ended up getting married, have a kid. I have a little 10-year-old daughter. And for like 5 years, 4 years, I was like, I don't want to go do anything, because I'd get, you know, there was opportunities that came, there were calls to maybe check out stuff. But so, and I was kind of just, I had been for years, even not when I wasn't touring with like Ozzy and David Lee Roth, and you're trying to do your own thing, you're always just constantly, you know, gone and rehearsing and playing. And so I ended up having a kid, buying a house, getting married, and then like 3 or 4 years into it, my dad got really ill. And my dad was always my biggest supporter. My dad was the one, I mean, he even sold his car to buy me equipment and would take a bus to work. I mean, and he'd go to my Randy Rhoads lessons with me. He was the best. Loved Michael Schenker. He'd come see me play at clubs, and he would be like, you know, telling me to play with more feeling, you know, because I'd be trying to fly off, you know, and he was the best. So anyways, he ended up getting dementia and broke both of his hips, and my sister and me were the only two that were really, really around him every day. And he passed away like three, going on 4 years ago. So, but even when he was sick, he was asking me, you know, about music. What are you doing? You know, and so anyway.
So he was very supportive.
Oh yeah, and when he passed away, and then that's when he passed away, I ended up, you know, getting like, okay, I gotta start putting some music out here. And luckily, my friend Dave from LA Sound Design knew of Robbie, and Robbie was in a band, so I didn't go after him. But then I heard he broke up with the band, and for like six months I started sending him.
Now, to let people know, Robbie is the singer in your current band, Pharmacos. Robbie Locke.
Robbie Locke, and he's from Arkansas. Amazing man, just such a great voice, soulful but ballsy and heavy. And
well, if you remember the first song you ever sent me, or the first thing you sent me, I mean, I was a fan of your playing already, so I knew how incredible your playing would be. But the first thing I said to you is, who is this guy? He's got some pipes.
Yeah.
Because it was crazy, his voice.
Oh, he's so good. And he's been out here 3 times making the disc. He'd come out like 3 times for like 2 weeks at a time. And just really we click. We get along great. You know, he's like a family member now. So
you have this idea, basically you and him,
yep,
to do this new band. What year is this then? This is like
maybe 3 years, 2.5 years ago.
Okay, so your daughter gets a little older, and yep. I get that, man. My daughter just turned 11 yesterday, and it's hard, especially when they're younger. You go away for a week, you come back, they're different people. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I got such a strong bond with her and stuff that, you know, I mean, she's the most important thing. So
yeah, so that's cool that you did that, and then you decide. But you're always playing the whole
time. Always playing. I mean, if you came over here, if you saw, like, that's why if you're ever in LA, you got to come over. I tons of Marshalls and guitars, and I had friends over all the time. Always playing. Always around the guitar. And I mean, I'm a student of the guitar. I'll be on it for forever. You know.
Do you have a studio at your house?
I have a. It's not attached to the house. It's detached. It's just a music room with a piano and a bunch of amps and guitars. It's not a studio. The studio I go to is in Pasadena, the Mouse House, and it's because he's got all the analog stuff, and he's got the Pro Tools. But whenever I come in there, they roll out the 2-inch machine, and I've been recording with him now for like 20 years. So.
So, Joe, when you, having done 5-6 years with Ozzy, played with Roth, I imagine that you even taking that time off, financially, you were able to do it. You took care of your money. You took care of your business.
Yep.
That's really smart. Good.
I've always lived a simple life, you know, not very simple life.
Right. So your idea is to do this band. You have this material. You find Robbie as your singer.
Yep.
And then the name Pharmakos, a lot of people have brought that up to me. Like, what is that? They never heard of a name like that. Where does that come
from?
Well,
that was a song. It was the song Scapegoat. That's what it was called at first, which it's Pharmakos. It's a scapegoat. So, but I didn't like the way it looked. It had the PH. So we just started, Robbie would send it over to me on the computer, and I just look at it, and I ended up changed the letters around to Pharmikos. So it kind of really doesn't mean anything now, but we just needed a name, and it went pretty quick, because sometimes that'll drive you nuts trying to think of a name.
Oh yeah, and if you think about it, what does a name really mean? I mean, what is an Aerosmith? If you didn't know there was a band called Aerosmith for 42 years, and you just heard that word, you'd be like, that's the weirdest thing I ever heard.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's synonymous.
You love it.
That Pharmakos becomes that, that's the idea. But so you basically made this record yourself and Robbie, basically, right?
Yep. It's all, that's the great thing. It's just been all, nobody telling us what to do or how to do it. I go in the studio and come up with a bunch of riffs, and I've been really fortunate because I got, like Robert playing on it.
Robert Trujillo.
Yeah, he's on like 7 of the songs. I've even got other stuff that, that I got probably 5 more tracks too that just need to be finished, but there's some, I think, 2 or 3 more with bass on him, and I had Brooks Wackerman playing drums. Do you know Brooks? He's in a band. He's in Bad Religion, but
I know who he is, but I don't know him personally.
Great drummer, and there was a couple other guys. Like Brooks couldn't play in a couple of them, and we had Ken Shock that was in a band called Candiria. They're from New York.
Sure, yep.
He's incredible, and then.
I think that's really cool that Robert, who you played with in Ozzy's band, who of course now is in Metallica, would still come out and play this stuff, and still do this. I mean, he didn't, he's not like, I'm in Metallica, dude, I don't do that stuff anymore. That's really cool that he did that.
We have such a great, the way we even play off each other, we really have a great chemistry with the way we, when I'm playing a riff, we're barely ever doubling the same thing. We do these wide interval riffs and stuff, and He's man, Robert's incredible. So
yeah, I'd love to get him on my TV show. I've got to try to reach him. If you talk to him, please tell him I'd love to have him on for an interview and to play or whatever he wants to do. Because you know, we've had Lars on, and we've had Kirk on, and I'd love to have him on. I think it'd be really cool. His story is really interesting. I've met him a few times. I don't know him well, but he's got, you know, he's a great player, obviously, and he's always been very cool.
Yeah, he's the best, and a lot of these riffs too were riffs that I've had for years too that I've had sitting around. So
the way you did this, I thought was the way I first found out about it was that you did a very kind of cool grassroots sort of way to do this. Like, you started like leaking little teaser videos and little teaser clips and songs. Yeah. It was very smart marketing at a very sort of grassroots sort of level, giving people little tastes of this as you were making it. Talk about that decision and where that idea came from.
Well, yeah, because we don't have, you know, we're just trying to write the best music we can and throw it out there and let it happen organically, and then if it's meant to happen, it'll happen. But it's great having like someone like you behind it, man. By you've been such a great advocate for us, and it's really opened even a lot of doors since you've been playing it. I mean, there was like four labels that contacted us, and a lot of people, you know, they all listen to you.
Well, I appreciate that. But, you know, the thing that's really important for me is the fact that, and I would say this all the time, because I hear from so many musicians, as you can imagine, that say, you know, hey, help me out like you helped out, I don't know, the Winery Dogs, or the way you helped out Pharmacos or whatever. It's not, to me, it's not about, and this, you're a prime example, because a lot of these guys I'm friends with and known forever. You and I don't know each other beyond just recently, and we only met that one time just recently.
Yeah.
I'm moved by one thing. I'm motivated by one thing, the music. It's been that way since day one. It's not about if you're a friend, if I know you, or what have you. It's about, is this stuff awesome, and is my audience going to love it, and do I love it? And that's for what I do gets me excited. So I appreciate you saying that, but the credit is to you guys for the music you made, because it checked all my boxes, man. It blew me away. And what was really cool to then, because sometimes, Joe, that happens, and then I put it on the radio and my audience doesn't really react. It's like, whatever. Yeah. When I put your songs on, as I've been doing for a while, the response is there. It's like, I get emails. Hey, when can I get this? How can I get this? Who is this guy? So we've been building to this point, and now that this record's about to come out, I'm excited for you, man, and I'm excited that people can finally get the thing.
Oh, and Eddie, when you hear this stuff, like, I mean, I haven't, wait till we get the band together, but just the stuff sounds, it's going to sound so incredible live. I mean, I blasted on the Marshalls over here, and it's just, it sounds like a 747. It's going to be really... It's gonna be fun to play it live. So
you're looking for a drummer and a bass player. Is that what's going on for playing live?
Yeah, and you know, it cracks me up, because you know, I listen to your shows and like how you talk about all these guys doing a bunch of different projects, and there's been a couple guys that I like, but they're in two or three other different things, and we want this to be a band. You know, we want it to be, you know, the same guys that, you know, you work your butt off. You know, I want to, like, I'm ready to start recording and sending you more songs.
Well, this record, the debut Pharmacos record, is available starting this Thursday.
Yep, Thursday.
How can everybody get it, whether they want physical or digital?
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, through CD Baby, they could get it, or Amazon. So, it you know, for the physical copies and the digital, I guess. So.
Now, did you do a record deal, or are you doing it on your own?
We're doing this one on our own. What I want to do is get the drummer and the bass player, and then get some management and let them start taking it for the next batch or whatever, even for this, you know, whatever down the road. But if we reissued it, or I don't know, but it's been going good, and it's spreading, and just like if people like luckily that are calling in and saying that they dig on it, hopefully they just telling a friend and hopefully just keep spreading, which it has been. It's been going great.
Well, that's the best marketing. That's the best marketing you can have. I mean, you can do all the tweeting and posting and hyping that you want to do, but at the end of the day, if the music's not there and it's not exciting to people, so when it spreads organically and just because people are loving what they're hearing when it connects to rock fans. I mean, fortunately, yeah, I mean, I have a big platform that I can play it for people, but more importantly, they're liking it. So hopefully if you can get a few other believers out there that can get the word out that this thing exists and this thing is kick ass, you know, I'm excited for where it could go for you. Do you have a plan to do any live shows yet, or you obviously have to get a band first,
no,
right?
I mean, hopefully, I'm thinking in February, we're going to try and do two videos, one for Scapegoat and Am I One, and either hopefully I get, I'm thinking on Scapegoat one, you know, we'll get, you know, maybe Robert and Brooks or whatever, we've been talking to them. If not, and if not, you know, if we get the guys in the band by then, we'll do two videos for that stuff and get those out there. And then Robbie will be back out here, and we want to get in a room with some of these guys that I've been recently talking to and just feel it out with these players. And
so you feel like you're close on finding a bass player, right, or drummer?
Like,
or still
like
looking?
There's a bass player that came over about 2 weeks ago that you know, he got out of his car and he brought his bass. He got out in here and he was playing, but he's in a couple other things too, which kind of, you know, it's the only drag with it.
Right.
But I understand they have to, you know, to make money and stuff. They got to spread their, you know.
Well, that's it. I mean, we're in the era of multitasking, and there's good and bad with that. I kind of like, you know, the guys that I love and know where I'm going to find them and make it special when they play, you know. But I understand, too, guys got to pay the bills and hustle. But it sometimes it gets too diluted, and you get these great bands that come together, and they never even get to do a live show because everybody's in five directions.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I mean, we've been spoiled with who's been playing on this, and it's got a certain standard. I want it to really – it's got to really – you know, be incredible. So,
yeah,
you know, so I don't want to settle, you know, it's got to be the right guys. So we're being picky and just trying to complete this thing, which we will, it's coming. And in the meantime, like, I'm ready to get, like I said, get in there and start working on some new, I got a bunch of other ideas, you know. Well, I've got a whole bunch of ideas, but I got some other ones I want to get in there and start, you know, working on now. So, you know, we could get, I could be sending you more stuff and be, a contender for 2015 or 16 with your list, you know.
Well, I'm just excited that you're playing again, man, and you know, it's great having you playing guitar and doing your thing, because you know, I think it's interesting. You were that guy so close to that big sort of mainstream awareness with, you know, you had these big tours. You had the big tour with David Lee Roth, but you didn't do the record. You're in Ozzy's band for 5-6 years, but you don't do the record, and you don't get that sort of next level of exposure. So it would be really cool if, when that comes for you, because you're so talented, it comes with your own thing as opposed to being somebody else's guitar player. And I really hope it happens with this band.
And I've always loved the situations I was in, but I always envied and really looked up to, like, the other bands that were out touring with us, that were out there doing their own trip and you know, putting their own music out there and getting to tour on their own stuff. So
yeah, you know, it's funny, you talk about Schenker, who I love as well, and I talked to Michael a bunch of times, and I said to him once, how come you never joined, really, like, you went into Scorpions, but you were only there for like one record or whatever. How come you never joined somebody else's band? You had opportunities. He was offered various gigs. And he said something to me pretty interesting. He said, I never want to play. I just got tired. I don't want to be the guy that plays everybody else's music. He said, nothing against those guys, but he said, I only want to play stuff that I created. And he said, if I would have gone into, you know, Aerosmith or whatever, all these things that people had talked to him about, he said, I would have ended up, you're just playing somebody else's catalog mostly. And he said, I wanted to do my own thing.
Yeah, you know, and too, which is such a great feeling is, you know, I mean, I'll listen to the radio, the Q104, but then it's even a bonus when I hear you play one of our songs. It's just like, oh my God, such a great feeling, and makes it really worth, you know, even doing it yourself. And, you know, 'cause it costs, like, the studio that we're at, doing it on 2-inch, it's not cheap, but it's the only way I would do it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, man.
Right.
Well, yeah, it's good stuff, and I appreciate you listening to the to that show. You know, that show is more straight music, where this show that you're doing right now, you know, this is more of a talk and a hang thing. So it's the best of all worlds. I appreciate you, you know, listening to what I do. And
you got me even listening. I mean, I went out and bought King. I went out and bought Rival Sons. You got me fired up over here.
Well, I'm glad, man, because like I said, I'm just glad you're playing again, and you're making great music. So I'm going to let you go, man, and I really appreciate the time, and I want to remind everybody to go out and get the debut album from Pharmacos, Amazon, CD Baby, and crank it up. You guys are going to love it. It's so killer.
Yeah, great. Thank you, Eddie.
That's it for the Eddie Trunk podcast for this week. Join me again next Thursday. Brand new podcast post every Thursday here at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com. And, of course, you can subscribe and download free on iTunes as well. Just search for the Eddie Trunk podcast. The Eddie Trunk podcast is produced by Katie Irizarry. Thanks to Joe Holmes again for being my guest. And thank you guys for listening. See you next Thursday for another all-new episode.
Thanks for listening to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.